You're listening to the ModernDogTrainer.net podcast, bringing you the best industry tips and topics for professional dog trainers worldwide. Now here are your hosts, Ines Gesho and Kat Camplin.
Welcome to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. My name is Ines McNeil, and I'm the founder of the Modern Dog Trainer blog and podcast. And today I have my co-host Kat here as well.
I'm Kat Camplin, contributor to the blog and co-host for the Modern Dog Trainer podcast.
Great. So since we're coming up to the application deadlines for the professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant certifications for the Council of Professional Dog Trainers, we've invited Brad here, who's a president, to discuss the application and testing process and to answer some questions about some of the recent changes to the CEU policies. So welcome, Brad. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
So the deadlines are fast approaching. What tips can you give for trainers and behavior consultants who are just finishing up their applications?
First and foremost, read the handbooks thoroughly. The handbooks are really well written. They're well laid out. All the information that you need to know is in the handbook. Make sure your training logs are filled out thoroughly. If you have questions about it, there are sample logs online. Submit the correct application form. If you have questions, you can call our office, and Suzanne, our administrator, will help you fill it out. Most people do a really great job, and usually what we find is that it's something where they just didn't thoroughly read the handbook, and they stumble. The other thing I would say is make sure you have contact information so that if your log needed to be verified, if there were questions about your training logs, that you could supply the necessary information so we could audit it appropriately if needed.
Cool. So, and this is, I guess, something where you don't want to wait to the last possible moment to get your application
update it. The application deadline for the CPDT fall exam is August 1st, and we will get, inevitably, everyone will be sending them in July 29th. But yeah, the sooner the better. That way, if there are complications or something happens with the testing center or whatever it is, we have time to get it corrected. And then the application deadline for the CBCC exam, the behavior consultant exam, is September 15th. So August 1st for the training exam and September 15th for the behavior exam.
Awesome. And what are some of the typical things that would get an application denied other than, you know, not reading the handbook and doing the log appropriately?
That's about it. I mean, not completing the form thoroughly, right? I mean, if you don't thoroughly fill out your form to give us the information that we need, you're not going to get registered. If your log is incomplete or doesn't have enough hours on it, it's not going to be accepted. It's a pretty straightforward process in terms of completing the information, submitting your training log, getting your attestation statement submitted by either a colleague or a veterinarian, for instance. So it comes down to being incomplete.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, reactions to the exam, for the knowledge assessed, it's what, 250 questions? Mm-hmm. Reactions vary so widely of whether it's easy, hard. What recommendations do you have for people preparing to take the test in the fall?
So, excuse me. I think, you know, to start off with saying, you know, that there are a lot of, we receive feedback periodically where, it's too easy, or you just have to read certain books and you can know exactly, you know, all of the answers. And maybe in the beginning of the examination process, that might have been true. I think the exam committees have spent an enormous amount of time working with our testing companies over the past several years to really strengthen the quality of the exams. So the items on them are more application based versus what might have been more definition based items previously. Mm-hmm. They're broader in scope. They're stronger items. It's really testing the candidates' knowledge of the processes for dog training. So I think that's important for people to know. In terms of are you ready to take the exam, you know, where do you fall in terms of the content areas? Really review the content outline so that you know what areas you're going to be tested on. We have practice exams for both the CVCC and the CPDT KA exams. And those practice exams are made up of retired questions from other exams, and they're weighted evenly to our to the full exam. So if you go online, you can take the practice exam, and it'll give you a picture of where you are in terms of learning theory or business practices and ethics, you know, in the certain content areas, and it'll give you an idea of kind of what the items are going to be looking like and what you can expect to see on the exam. We also have study objectives for both the CPDT-KA and the CBCC-KA. So the handbooks, the website are both, you can find the handbooks on the website, and they're very thorough and laid out well, and I think give you a really good idea of what you need to be prepared for. And again, take the practice exams. It'll give you an idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some really good ideas.
And for me, I know that I just got tired after like 150 questions. Like, and you're not allowed coffee.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, yeah, I mean, some people just, you know, some people have test anxiety, and some people, you know, they put so much pressure on themselves to pass and maybe overthink the items and things like that. But, you know, there is, we've actually been working with our testing company to do some reliability studies on our exams to see if we could get the same level of reliability and thoroughness by asking less questions, strong questions, but, you know, changing the weightings a bit and having the same level of exam, but with, let's say, 225 questions, because there is a certain point where test takers, like you said, I get tired, and then they're not testing as well. So we're still not maybe gaining the same information. So we're actually looking at that kind of stuff now.
Cool.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great. And then one of the other questions we had was, we noticed that there's about 3,000 knowledge assessed certificates, uh-huh. And then there's only about 200 skills assessed and behavior consultants. Right. Why do you think there's a difference in the number of those, and, you know, why aren't people pursuing the higher certifications?
Yeah, we don't have metrics as to why they're not taking them.
Okay.
One of our thoughts is that the KA, the CPDT KA has been around for, what are we going on, 11, 12 years. So obviously our pool is going to be much larger for that exam.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the CPDT KSA, it's still fairly new. I think people get, it's a bit more of a process, right? You've got to find dogs, you've got to find other handlers, you've got to videotape it. So it's more of a process to get the exam completed and submitted. I think there are the potential to let people get nervous about having to be on camera and demonstrate their skills. I think for the CPDKSA, that's kind of where we fall in. And I don't know that for sure. If anyone wants to give us feedback as to why you haven't taken it, we'd love to hear it. You know, we're constantly looking at the skills assessment during each administration to track, you know, how can we make the exam, how can we make it vary the skills, truly test or look at someone's ability to interact with a client and train a dog. It's, you know, but still give a thorough structured exam. Like, everyone has to be tested with the same criteria. You can't just submit a random video where, you know, you're working with a dog 100 feet away, we can't hear you, or, you know, there's got to be criteria for your video. And
yeah.
And so it's an interesting mix trying to how to get it and keep it cost effective for people.
Oh, for sure. I could see that.
With the behavior exam, my thought from conversations I've had is that people were scared of it, quite frankly. You know, it was, you know, when we first issued it, it was a really thorough exam, almost it was actually too difficult. I think it's what we, you know, what we've pretty much decided in terms of the items were maybe outside the scope, especially when you look at the anatomy and the biology and things like that. So we've really, after we did our RDS and so forth, we took we really looked at the CBCC exam, and structured it differently, adjusted the items. So it really was, you know, it was a step up from the CPDT in terms of it focused on fears, phobias, anxieties, but it wasn't a doctorate level type exam. So it was more in line with the scope of the work. And, right. You know, we've started to see that we're publicizing the upcoming exam dates more frequently through our social media pages and email blasts. And we're seeing increased number of certificates because of that. So some of it, I think, can come down to like, we just forgot the deadline, or we didn't know, or I meant to do it, but I just didn't get around to it. So keeping the information in front of people is proving to help us get more applications in. And we're also seeing, after we have changed the CBCC exam a bit and adjusted it, we're seeing more candidates take the exam, more candidates pass the exam, and we just had our first recertification. It's just been out for 5 years, and 86% of those CBCC KAs recertified and kept their credential. So I think that's promising.
Yeah, that's really promising.
That's awesome. So the CCPDT was accredited by the National Commission for Certifying Agencies, and I was poking around their website and trying to figure out what the heck they were. So I guess, why did you guys pursue that accreditation, and what does it really mean?
So we pursued it because we felt we've been around for 10 to 11 years when we did that. And when we went through the accreditation process, and we felt that it was important for us as an organization and to our certificates who held our credential to have a third party look at our processes, our policies, and to make sure that everything we were doing, our examinations, the way that we conducted daily business, was following best practices for a credentialing organization. I think that they're, you know, it's a voluntary process, much like the dog training credential, right? Every week we get feedback saying, oh, I don't need to be certified. I can operate and get business without being certified. But having an independent third party say, you know, yes, you've demonstrated best practice and you're following best practice and you're adhering to this standard of practice, we feel it's important for dog training professionals. So we also felt it was important for ourselves to make sure that we were following those best practices for a credentialing organization.
Cool. And I think you guys are the only ones that have done that.
Right now, the CCPDT, to my knowledge, is the only dog training exam, that is accredited by the organization. And, awesome. And you know, there's people, to that same point, there's people who say, you don't need it and it's unnecessary. But again, it's a good checks and balance, I think.
Right. So one of the bones of contention with the CCPDT is you guys still allow the use of shock collars should all other intervention strategies have been exhausted. And I guess, you know, what does... in your view, exhausted other strategies look like, and why is the option left open when we have quite a bit of other types of methods or recipes to use?
Yeah, it's a bone of contention. It's a hot topic anytime it comes up on an email list or in a conversation with dog trainers. On our own board, we get into debates about how we should go and where we should go. When we first issued the electronic training collar position statement, it had been proposed to the board that we do an all-out prohibition of training collars, of electronic training collars. And we issued the survey to get some feedback, and we went back and forth and talked about it and held a lot of debate, and we couldn't. I think it's twofold. I think that we are a credentialing organization, and our job is to test the knowledge and skills of dog trainers and certify that they've met minimal competency and that they can safely practice. We have the humane hierarchy that outlines the processes that a trainer should use to when they're implementing training practices, and it goes through, you know, management and positive reinforcement and consulting other professionals and all those things. For me personally, I don't feel like we could accurately support an all-out ban on electronic train collars. None of us on the board are saying, please go use electronic train collar, but to police that policy accurately, we couldn't do it. And we didn't feel like we were at a place where it was our job to limit professionals in their practice. We're giving you a framework to work within. We're saying that once you get to employing positive punishment of any kind, you need to reevaluate and can you take another strategy, another step. To fully limit and then be able to implement that policy, we just weren't there yet. And it's an ongoing conversation. We talk about it at least every 6 months. And say, are we ready to adjust this?
Shocking.
So, we will be criticized either way, right? If we don't fully ban the use of electronic train collars, we're criticized because we allow them. And if we did, we'd be criticized because we did, and we're limiting professionals' ability to work. So it's a hot topic. I think that there's no other tool that brings such debate. And at some point, you know, we felt like issuing the position statement and the way that we framed the humane hierarchy was a step in that direction. And over time, our position will evolve, and the profession will continue to evolve, and so will our position.
Yeah, it's one of those discussions.
Happens all the time. And I don't know. I think that, you know, it's hard. Sometimes I've got to, you know, put on my presidential hat and be all political. And then there's times where it's like, I'm a professional too. And I think that I don't use electronic train collars in terms of my daily practice, but to say that I never would or never have.
Yeah, you can't, it's never say never, right?
Right, never say never. And so the other piece of it too, in terms of you know, electronic train collars on a whole, and I'm probably going to go down a rabbit hole I don't want to go down, but, you know, they're not illegal in this country. So right. Then I think it would make more sense for like APDT or the Pet Professionals Guild as a membership-based trade type organization, right, to say our members can't use, than for a credentialing agency to say as a practitioner you can't use. So, right. Yeah.
And I think for me, it's like, okay, well, if you're going to go down this rabbit hole, should skills assessed videos include the proper use of shock collars?
You're right. No, you're exactly right. We've had that same conversation. It's like, you know, I don't want us to become, both as a profession and an organization, where we're just training or issuing or certifying trainers who are learning how to manage and reinforce behavior, right? I mean, there are four quadrants, but how do you accurately test someone's ability to employ positive punishment if needed in a safe and humane way, right? And so it's a weird situation to be in.
Yes. All right. Well, since we're talking about bones of contention,
next.
Might as well just keep going, right? So CCPTT recently changed. Well, I guess it wasn't recently. The deadline is looming about who qualifies as presenters for CEUs to be able to be used for recertification. And it's either certification through CCPTT or some form of higher education degree, mm-hmm, in the topic that you're talking about. And I did respond to the newsletter on this one, must admit. But can you tell us what, you know, triggered the policy change and what the thinking is?
Yeah. Another one of those topics that caused considerable discussion at the board level, and we had been thinking about doing it for a while, and it was actually went into effect July 2014, and we've extended the deadline to the end of 2016 for the policy to be implemented for a variety of reasons. Our thinking is that the industry as a whole, like everyone wants to talk about, you know, science-based, humane training techniques, and we felt it's important that all of, if our certificates are going out and getting education, that education is provided by someone who has also demonstrated their knowledge and or skills through a third party. I think that as professionals, right, if we want to be professional dog trainers and we want to practice, then we should hold ourselves to the same standard as other professionals and other professions. So we need to demonstrate that. You can't go out and just operate and work without having demonstrated your skill set. It's about public safety. It's about ensuring that certificates are getting a quality education. And that's not to suggest that people who don't have a credential are not providing quality education or are not skilled trainers, but why aren't you certified? Why didn't you get a degree? You're out there educating other professionals about how to practice, but you're not holding yourself to any expectation. Mm-hmm. So we felt like it was time to draw a line in the sand, and it's a little uncomfortable, and we received some pushback from a few people. Overall, the response has been inviting, and people understand it. Some people felt it was premature, but it goes back to when is the right time,
right?
If you know, when is the right time to put a line in the sand and say, you know, all dog training professionals should hold some sort of degree or credential in order to practice.
So just doing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, sure.
So you're suggesting 82-year-old Karen Pryor go get a certification of some time so that her CEUs, her presentation qualifies for CEUs?
So first, if so, while Karen Pryor, if she submitted an application, I don't know, and I'm going to say, like, I think, and you know, I don't know Karen's bio, quite frankly. I mean, I know who she is and how much she's all of her work, but I don't know her educational background, so I can't speak to whether or not she has a degree. If a certificate attends a CEU course that was not previously approved for CEUs, they can submit. So, you know, using the Karen Pryor analogy, if Karen Pryor's course doesn't qualify because she doesn't have a degree or a credential, and Brad Pfeiffer goes to her course, I can still submit a CEU application for review. And assuming that it meets the content outline and expectation of the CEU policy, you know, the CEU committee could approve it, even though it was a Karen Pryor course and her course wasn't approved, right? So there are options there. But quite frankly, to answer your question, yes, I think. Yeah. You know, and I know that's not popular. I know that's not popular. You know, Suzanne Clothier was not happy with the response, and she went on her social media page and made some comments. But mm-hmm. quite frankly, and can I say, when we talk about professionalism, the people who didn't agree with it sent us emails privately and said, hey, what's going on here? I've always been approved for CEUs. You know, what's the process here? Or they went on our Facebook page when we posted and made some comments or asked some questions. That's how professionals act.
Right.
We don't go on social media and blast other professionals, right? You don't see dentists or doctors going, oh, that guy up the street, you know? So quite frankly, I do think that this is a step in the right direction in terms of not only demonstrating skills, but holding people to a professional code of conduct.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, change is never easy.
It's not easy.
But I think to up the level of, you know, qualified dog trainers everywhere, at least in the States, it's, you know, a step in the right direction.
And there's people like, you know, Suzanne Clothier and Trish King and, mm-hmm. you know, people who don't hold credentials that are crazy, crazy great dog trainers. And I highly respect them because not only are they good dog trainers, but they're dog people. And I feel like I'm a dog person. Like I breed dogs and I show dogs and I raise dogs and I have a kennel. Like I'm a dog person, right? And so there's a difference, I think, at times between being a dog person and being a dog trainer, right? And so I value what they bring, but I also feel like I'm out here practicing and I'm holding myself to this expectation as are 3,000 other people saying, you know, we've demonstrated our skills and we believe in following this code of conduct and we're going to adhere to the human hierarchy. And so why shouldn't Suzanne Clothier do it, quite frankly, mm-hmm. right? And it's not because she gets something from it. The other criticism we receive when we issue this policy is, well, I don't need certified. I'm practicing without it. And it doesn't get me anything. And it's, you know, you've got trainers who are you know, using a prong collar and all this stuff. But getting a credential isn't supposed to get you anything, right? I mean, getting your credential doesn't mean that you're a great dog trainer any more than having your MD says that you're a great doctor.
Right.
Right. That's it true. Says that you've met minimal standards of practice, that you're following a certain code of conduct or code of ethics. And it's about public safety. Mm-hmm. So being a great dog trainer comes from continuing education, training more dogs, networking with other trainers, right? It's experience. So I always get a little frustrated when, you know, we hear, well, we're not going to recertify because, or I get nothing from this.
Right.
You're not going to get anything from it. Yeah, It's not a membership, right? You've said you're demonstrating to your colleagues, your clients and the public, I am safe to practice. I've met minimal expectations for my profession.
Right. And I mean, at some point, whether it's this year or 5 years or 10 years from now, you know, it's going to have to be something that is put into place. So, you know, at some point somebody is going to be upset.
Right. And it comes down to, you know, when you look at, we looked at a lot of things when we issued this policy, mm-hmm. We looked at grandfathering and with our accreditation, we are limited on our ability to do those sort of things. And so it was advised from our testing company that we not do that. Mm-hmm. We couldn't find an objective way to just say, well, this set of five people get in and that set of five people don't.
Right. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it ends up becoming a popularity contest. You know, you could say, well, they authored a book or they've spoken at 500 conferences or, you know, they're nationally recognized. You know, Cesar Millan has written a book. Those are the things that people are throwing out. But so, okay, yes, you know, there's Karen Pryor. She's nationally recognized and she's written books and that's all great. And again, I don't know her educational background, so I don't mean to use her name if I'm wrong. But, you know, there's no objective way to say this is the criteria for being kind of grandfathered in.
Right.
So we felt this was the easiest way to do it. We also, in that policy, which was not recognized by anyone, we issued rollover for CEUs. So if during your recertification period you earned 40 CEUs, you could take the additional four into your next recertification period versus losing them. So that's coming out. We also adjusted the host requirements. So previously, any host, after their event, they had to go in to the online system and submit the CEUs for their attendees. That's a bit of a chore and a hassle, especially when you get people who maybe not remember their certification number or didn't submit it. And so now the hosts are going to be able to share the approval email with their attendees. So the attendees can go in, following the link, go into the online system and submit their own certification number. And their online record will be updated. So that makes it easier for use. The other piece that we did, ongoing courses for vendors, they had to be reapplied for and reviewed every year. And it's going to every 2 years. So there was a lot of changes in that policy.
Yeah.
And the one that got grabbed onto was the one about speaker presidential eligibility requirements, which had actually been publicized 2 years ago, but it wasn't until we actually started
saying no
that people were like, what in the world?
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow. So everything other than what you just mentioned, are there any other projects or changes that are kind of in the works or in the plans for the next few years?
What are we doing? We are working on, we did the website. We just issued the new format of the Scoop this last week. So everything, all of our branding is coming together. We are in the process. We have a marketing person on retainer now. So we are working on increasing our marketing efforts to the public, the average pet owner, in terms of what to look for in dog trainers and why look for a certified dog trainer. Marketing is the big thing where we're putting a lot of our resources in right now, is just getting the word out about certification to the average, the pet owning public. So
right, yeah.
We're doing some campaigns. We're working on some campaign ideas for that. What else?
And that's really nice, because when you get the phone call that says, hey, I found you on the CCPDT website, you have a different sort of mentality of a client calling you versus the, hey, how much do you guys charge?
Right. Yeah, I think we've done a lot in the past few years in terms of just trying to clean everything up. I said earlier, the items on the exam have been rewritten and reevaluated, so more application based. We got the new website underway, which is more professional, easier to use. Working on increasing marketing efforts so that the CCPDT credential is more recognized and the average pet owner understands the value of certification. And what that brings to them. And really, not to sound like a broken record, but it all comes back to public safety. Making sure that the people who are practicing are safe to do so.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
Yep. I don't think there's any other big projects. I'm sure there are, but I don't think there's any other big projects that I can release right now.
Right.
without getting torched somewhere. Yeah, I think the only other thing that would be good to maybe mention, and it goes back to what we talked about a little bit in terms of even the electronic training collars and things like that. We have what we feel are pretty solid practices in place, and they may not be agreeable to everyone, and people may want to see us do things a little differently. But as a general rule, I think we're operating in a really healthy, well-rounded way. I would encourage or remind people, if you're a certified trainer through us and you have a colleague who is not following best practices or who is doing harm to their clients or dogs, there is a process in place where you can file a formal complaint. And each of us as professionals, while it's no fun to be the one who said, Jenny down the block is not following best practice, it's important for us as individuals, it's important for us as professionals, and ultimately it's important for the clients and the dogs that we're helping to step up. The CCPDT can't uphold their policies unless we know that their policies being broken, right? We can't go on witch hunts. We don't go out and regulate dog trainers. That's not our job.
Right.
So if there is a problem, then please let us know. You can always email us. It's administrator@ccpdt.org. You can email me privately at bpfeiffer@ccpdt.org and talk to us. But we'll look into it. We want our policies upheld. We want our trainers that are certified through us to be following best practice. And if they're not, then we want to know about it. So you got to step up. And I think each of us needs to hold the others accountable.
Absolutely.
So my last question is, do you think the industry is ready for licensing?
I don't know that, quite frankly. No, I don't think it's ready. And I think it's because they need to be. They're not ready. I think they need to be ready is my opinion. I think, I think.
Can you clarify that?
Yeah, I think that we should be. I do think that, dog trainers should be licensed and registered. I think that there's the ability to do such great harm when you employ the wrong trainer that I do think in terms of public safety, the dog trainer should be licensed. I don't think the industry as a whole is ready for it. I don't think that they want it. I think it's kind of like the electronic training collar thing. I think there's going to be this split bag where a lot of people say, "What? I don't need that. Don't tell me what to do." Right. And there's going to be a lot of people say, "Yes, like this is where we need to go." And I kind of feel like, you know, when I look at people who start criticizing and, you know, saying things like, "I'm never going to recertify again," or "This is why I don't take your exams," they're, in my opinion, they're not true professionals, right? Because true professionals get the bigger picture, right? As a dog training professional, I would have no problem today if I had to hold the CCPDT credential in order to practice, or if I had to, you know, register with my state in order to practice and have, you know, minimal expectations. Like that's what professionals do, right? That's the expectation. If you want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be, you know, a social worker, this is what you have to do in order to do that, right? And if we're going to continue moving ourselves and actually be seen as professionals and held to looked at the same level, right? I mean, I remember I was at a client's house one day and I gave her my hourly fee and she goes, "Wow, you make as much as my husband does and he's a surgeon. You're just a dog trainer." I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am a dog trainer." Right. And I never saw her again. Like it doesn't matter. Right. So if we're going to be moving in that direction and we really want to be professionals and offer a service to the public, then I think we need to be moving in that direction. And I think the CCPDT supports licensing and love to be a part of that conversation as we do that step. But I think that, you know, that's where we need to be headed, is my opinion. That was a long-winded answer.
So do you think the CPDT would go into the lobbying arm of trying to lobby certain states for licensing? Is that something that's 5 years down the line?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I told you it was going to be a hard one.
I think, yeah, we approved but have not published because we're still trying to figure out what is the best process. A position statement on mandating certification that basically states we support licensing for dog trainers and we are currently deciding what does that look like. We're not suggesting that we're the end all be all,
right. But
you know, there's a lot of avenues, I think, you know, for us for dog trainers to get licensed. And so I think that, you know, are we gonna go out and lobby? I'm not sure yet. We're having conversations for like, what does that look like if we're gonna start supporting a movement or a push towards licensing? And it may be that we lobby in one state and see if we can get it done. Probably a 3 to 5 year plan for us, I would think.
Cool.
So the emails are gonna start coming in now, girl.
My joke is that you need a license to give somebody a massage.
Right.
But it's okay that you're not licensed when, especially with day training, you're alone in somebody's house with their dog. Nannies, you know, are owners going to start doing nanny cams for the dog trainers?
Right. You know, and that's the exact point. And so people who are going to throw stones and criticize, they can't look at the big picture, right?
Yeah.
They see it as a personal criticism and or a personal, you know,
They're threatened, maybe.
Yeah, threatened. Yeah, I think that's exactly, yeah, threatened. And that's it exactly. I mean, you have to be licensed to give a massage, but you can go into someone's home and give them advice on how to deal with their aggressive dog.
Right.
In front of their children, right, with no expectations. And the challenge for it, quite honestly, is that there is no – that we don't have any consensus on – best practice, right? Like what the CCPDT defines as best practice may not be what, you know, the PPG defines as best practice. And so at some point, I think we're going to have to do something has to happen. I know over the years, there's been conversations with every organization, right? I mean, APDT came together and then they formed the CCPDT. And there's always these conversations back and forth. The challenge is that at some point, you know, groups like APDT and CCPDT, we're going to have to form, I feel like, a common language, a common theme. And, you know, we're all going to have to come together and say, you know what, here's the core essentials, and make stuff happen, is my opinion, right? Instead of we all have a similar goal, but we're all still kind of doing our own thing, you know?
Right.
So I don't know what that looks like right now. And you know, Robin and I have talked about it. Margie and I have talked about it. So it's just, you know, what does that look like, you know?
Yeah.
Do you support licensing for dog trainers?
I do. I also think there should be licensing for pet sitters. If the whole point of licensing is, you know, to sort of force compliance with insurance and bonding. And
yep.
We've had a number of, and even boarding, we've had a number of deaths in Southern California from pet sitters, and most recently a boarding facility left a French bulldog out in 110 degree heat out in the kennel, and it died. And every time we see this, it's always go after the individual and social media shame and all that stuff. And it would be so much easier. We can say, you lose your license.
Right. Yep. Yep.
You know?
Yep. It takes the subjectivity away from it.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I think that's important. Yeah.
Awesome.
Good talk.
Yeah, that was great. Well, I learned a lot, and I'm excited to share all of this with everybody. But thanks again for joining us today, and we really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and opinions, and some little bit of info on where the CPDT is headed.
Anytime, I'm happy to talk with anyone. Anytime they would like to call me, we're not up here in our ivory tower. We're just doing the best we can each day to try to keep plugging forward. So
absolutely, yeah. And thank you, Kat, for co-hosting with me as always. It's always a pleasure to have you on here as well.
Thank you for 8 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. Don't forget, you can check out the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net/podcast. You can also share your thoughts and support our podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. Until next time.